Get your own Dharma t-shirts from the official Lost store by ABC. You can pick up a Dharma kitchen shirt like our listener Jeff, or pick up a whole set of shirts like Jim in Southern California.
We've posted their photos on our site, and we'll post yours too if you get an official Lost shirt. Just click the banner at the top of our website at hawaiiup.com/lost.
The Transmission, Episode 60, April 18th, 2009.
I need you to take me to Rosinski at the worksite, immediately. You, Hurley, you say a word.
Pull over, Poop, got it.
Aloha from the Island Lost fans. You are tuned into The Transmission. This is a podcast devoted to the show Lost on ABC. My name is Jen.
And I'm Ryan, and we're here to talk about the latest episode of Lost, Some Like It Hoth. And here's how we're going to do it.
We'll recap the episode in 8 minutes or less.
Then we'll break down the episode in greater detail.
We'll hear from you all, everybody, in our feedback segment.
And then we'll skip quickly through a tiny little forward cabin. So, you ready?
Let's get lost.
Episode 13 of Season 5 is called Some Like It Hoth, and it's got a regular flashback setup, so let's start with the flashback.
The former Mrs. Pierre Chang is checking out an apartment for her and her son, young Miles. Mm-hmm. Miles hears whispers from a nearby apartment and finds a man on the floor inside. Miles says he heard him call out for his wife, but his mother says he's dead.
Next, older punk Miles returns to visit his sick mother and asks her to tell him how he does the things he does and about his father. She says that his father kicked them out and never cared about them, and he's been dead for a long time. Miles asks where his body is, and she says, somewhere you can never go.
Ghost-busting Miles goes to see a man, Mr. Gray, about his son who died in a car crash. Mr. Gray says his son's body was cremated, and Miles says it works better with a body. Miles makes the man pay extra and asks what he wants to know.
Mr. Gray says he wants to know if his son knew that he loved him. Miles grabs his hands and tells Mr. Gray to concentrate on his son, and after a few moments, Miles tells Mr. Gray that his son always knew he loved him.
As Miles is leaving, Naomi walks up and says her employer wants his services. She takes him to a body to test him out. Miles says the body's name is Felix, and he was delivering a file to a man named Widmore. The file explains the faked plane wreckage at the bottom of the Indian Ocean.
Naomi is impressed and tells Miles that she's leading an expedition to an island to find a man, an island with a number of deceased individuals who may have information on where to find him. Miles says no, but when she offers him $1.6 million, he asks, when do we leave?
Miles is grabbed on the street and thrown into a van. Bram, who we recognize as one of Ilana's henchmen on the island, tells him not to work for Charles Widmore. He says Miles doesn't know what lies in the shadow of the statue, so he's not ready to go to the island.
Bram says if Miles goes with them, he'll know everything, who he is, why he has a gift, and what happened to his father. Miles says that he stopped caring about his father, but he cares about money, and he asks for double of what Widmore was going to pay him, or $3.2 million.
Bram tells Miles they won't pay him, but that all that money in the world isn't going to fill the empty hole inside him. Bram says, you're playing for the wrong team. Miles asks what side that would be, and Bram says, we're the team that's going to win.
Miles goes back to Mr. Gray and returns his money. He says that he lied and he couldn't talk to his son. Mr. Gray asks why Miles is telling him he lied. Why couldn't you let me believe what you said? And Miles says it wouldn't be fair to your son. If you needed him to know you loved him, you should have told him when he was still alive.
Back on the island, Sawyer and Kate go back to the security fence, and Sawyer calls Miles to tell him to erase the security tapes. But before Miles can do it, Horace comes in. Since Sawyer's not there, Horace says he has to bring Miles into the circle of trust.
Horace tells Miles to take a package out to Rodzinski in Sector 334, and Rodzinski will have something to bring back, no questions asked. Miles notes that Sector 334 is hostile territory. He goes out to Rodzinski, who takes the package, and the package is a body bag.
Two men bring out a body. Miles asks what happened, and Rodzinski says he fell into a ditch. Miles notes the man's wound and asks if the ditch had a gun. Rodzinski tells him to just take the body. After the men leave, Miles opens the body bag and asks, what really happened?
Horace tells Miles to take the body to Dr. Chang at the Orchid, but Hurley is already loading the van with food for the Orchid crew. He says they should carpool. As they drive, Hurley asks how to spell bounty hunter, and he also notices a bad smell.
Hurley goes back to check his food and finds the body. Miles says the body's name is Alvarez and that his tooth filling was yanked out and pulled through his brain. Hurley asks how he knows that and suspects that Miles can talk to dead people. Hurley says that he can talk to dead people too.
Meanwhile, Kate goes back to Juliet and says they gave Ben to the others. Roger arrives and is shocked to find Ben missing. Juliet says that she doesn't know where he is, and Roger says he's going to security. Juliet says, well, here we go.
Kate goes to Roger and says she's sure that things are going to work out. Roger asks what she means. She tells him not to give up hope. Roger suspects she knows something and tells her to mind her own business.
Later, Roger asks Jack if he knows Kate because she's got a weird thing for my kid. He says that Kate may have something to do with what happened. Jack says, you're just drunk and having crazy ideas. Jack says, Kate is my friend and she'd never do anything to hurt Ben.
Sawyer gets home and Jack is waiting for him. Jack tells Sawyer and Juliet that Roger suspects Kate. Sawyer thanks him for the intel and Jack leaves. But Phil arrives and tells Sawyer he knows that he took Ben. Sawyer brings him inside, then punches him out.
Back in the van, Hurley tells Miles that he talks to dead people all the time and even plays chess with them. Miles says that's not how it works. He says there's no talking, just what they knew before they died. Hurley says Miles is just jealous because his power is better.
They get to the Orchid and Dr. Chang is upset that Hurley is there. Hurley says he won't tell anyone about the body. Dr. Chang says he better keep it a secret or he'll get shipped off to Hydra Island.
Hurley says that guy is a douche, but Miles says that douche is my dad. Hurley says it's weird that Miles' dad is the guy from all those orientation movies except he used the name Arvin Candle. He asks Miles how long he's known.
Miles says that on the third day they were on the island, his mother got in line behind him. Hurley reminds Miles that everyone in Dharma will be killed and asks why Miles isn't trying to save them. Miles says that they can't, so why bother?
Miles and Hurley drop Dr. Chang off at the Swan construction site. They look out the window and one man asks another what serial number to put on the hatch lid. Well, they're the numbers, of course, and Miles asks how Hurley knows them.
Hurley says, they're building our hatch, the one that crashed our plane. There's going to be an accident and they have to build a computer with a button to push so the world doesn't end.
Later, Hurley tells Miles that since he didn't really know his dad before, he can hang out with him now. But Miles says he doesn't want to know him better and tells Hurley to stay out of his business. Of course, then he gets into Hurley's business and grabs his notebook and starts to read it.
It's a description of The Empire Strikes Back. Hurley says since Star Wars just came out, he can send George Lucas the sequel with some improvements. Miles says it's a stupid idea, but Hurley says, at least I'm not too scared to talk to my own dad.
Hurley says that he hated his dad, who left when he was 10, but that the best thing he ever did was give him a second chance. Miles says he just doesn't want to know. Hurley says that was Luke Skywalker's attitude when he found out that his dad was Darth Vader.
Hurley says that Luke and Vader worked it out eventually, but at great cost. It all could have been avoided if they just communicated, he says. So Miles walks toward Dr. Chang's house and sees him through the window reading a book to baby Miles.
Right. Dr. Chang looks genuinely happy, though, and Miles starts to tear up, but Dr. Chang gets a phone call and comes out and tells Miles he needs his help. The sub has arrived with scientists from Ann Arbor. Miles goes down to the sub and helps a man onto the dock, but it's Daniel Faraday.
Daniel!
He says, hi, Miles. Long time. No see.
And thud.
And that's Some Like It Hoth in under 8 minutes. We'll take a quick break and when we come back, we'll break it down in greater detail. All right, Jen. So last week or at least you in particular, didn't like Dead is Dead. And we had wonderful feedback from our listeners saying, we hear what you're saying, but you're completely wrong. So now, how did you like Some Like It Hoth?
It was so goofy and cute and funny. Do you remember Trisha Tanaka is Dead?
Mm-hmm.
I had the same feeling watching this as I did that one.
Is that a good feeling?
Yes.
Okay, so you liked this episode?
I liked it a lot.
All right. So, I mean, I agree that it had a lot of things in there just for the fans. A lot of winks and nods and, you know, great one-liners, of course, because Hurley is in it and factors heavily in it. Yeah, I liked it because it was a very traditional flashback setup, which,
yeah,
you know, again, brings us back to season one. one. And, you know, it had a just sort of a checklist of answers that it just sort of went down in a very efficient way, but not, you know, in a frustrating way like last week where it seemed like boring bullet points. But for whatever reason, they seemed to hit it just with the right color, the right tone. And of course, just that buddy-buddy relationship between Hurley and Miles was fantastic.
I thought Ken Leung was really great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was his story, his flashback. A lot of us were wondering when we were going to get to him. I mean, because of the writer's strike during season four, we lost a lot of the opportunity to get to know the Freighter folk. But I would say that his story was worth the wait. I thought that he did it very well. In fact, he looked great as a young punk, as a teenager.
Well, you know, some of the characters make better younger versions of themselves than others. And this is one of the better ones, because I actually thought for a little while that that was a younger guy.
Right, that it was someone else playing him, but it was him. He pulled it off very, very well. And of course, we learned that his character has a lot of daddy issues, which is, I think, basically the primary prerequisite for ending up on the island in this show. But I think he handled it well. He depicted it and made it believable. I mean, his backstory was clearly compressed very tightly since we had to see him from a little kid to where he is.
Yeah.
But I believe that he had daddy issues. And so when you see him in that scene where he sees his father through the window playing with Young himself and seems happy, and he gets sort of red-eyed, and specifically the exact moment when, you know, Dr. Chang comes out and says, "Miles, I need you." And, you know, Miles has to turn around. And he goes, "You do?" Like, his voice catches. My voice caught, too. It was just really good. It got a little dusty in the house.
Yeah.
I thought he did a great job.
Well, this was the first episode I ever remember in which there was a fart joke.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, there was a lot of comedy, and again, a lot of it due to Jorge Garcia and Hurley's character. A lot of little things that he got to throw in, all kinds of pop culture references, like, hey, we can stop global warming, but that hasn't happened yet, so maybe we can prevent it. Or, you know, of course, the conversation about polar bear poop. I just couldn't get away from enjoying that one.
And the whole Empire Strikes Back.
Absolutely.
I wasn't expecting that. I mean, I knew that it would probably come up a little bit, I mean, given the title of the episode.
Right.
But, I mean, to have him write the screenplay to Empire Strikes Back, I thought was kind of genius.
Well, the best part of it is the next day, people kept changing the screenwriter credit on Wikipedia to Jorge Garcia. I mean, to Hurley, Hugo Reyes. But in any case, yeah, I mean, they wrote it into the story, so it was a total geek fest, except that I thought it was fascinating that when, you know, Bram is trying to tell Miles, hey, you know, we can tell you what's going on, give you the answers, explain your father, and he says, "I'm not interested." You know, they don't get past his armor, but when Hurley puts it into the Darth Vader story for Empire Strikes Back, that seems to really hit home for Miles. So
yeah, he must have been a Star Wars geek.
I guess so. So I thought that was great and funny.
And I liked that it could have been gimmicky, but it wasn't.
Like just a little indulgent, a little too meta.
Well, but I thought, you know, the balance of the comedy with all the stuff that we found out made it really satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I can see how some people might have thought it was just a little too winky, but for the most part, it was a winner for me. And specifically, you mentioned, you know, they do give you answers. They did kind of go down a lot of little things. You know, yes, Miles is Dr. Chang's son. I mean, a lot of people suspected that. I would have to admit, I was skeptical when those theories first started going around, but there you go. It's confirmed. And of course, why way back in season three did he ask for, was it season three, when he asked for $3.2 million? This is why. He's still trying to double his investment from Widmore Industries.
I thought it was like a code. Remember we were saying that we thought it was some kind of secret code?
Yeah, and
it was really just Miles being greedy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not 3.2 means there's a person in my closet holding with a gun to my daughter's head. No, you know, it's just a regular old number. And of course, it proves that I guess you can at least make eye contact or see yourself in line of vision without the universe imploding. I think that's an important development.
Well, yeah, so far. I mean, so far that seems to be the case.
Right. I mean, we were saying earlier when Locke stayed away from seeing himself at the hatch door that coming in, you know, within proximity of himself would be an issue, but at least that's not.
I still think that's going to be part of the incident.
I think a lot of our fans do, too. We're going to get to that into You All, Everybody. I think, though, there are still some questions that come up in this episode. For example, you know, there was the specific shout-out to the Widmore and the fake wreckage at the bottom of the ocean as the test, right?
Right.
That Miles had to do. But what does that prove? Does it prove then that Ben was behind the wreckage and not Widmore, because Widmore was looking into it?
No, I think it was Ben, and it seemed to me that the package was evidence being delivered to Widmore.
Right, right. Again, we have a lot of stuff in the You All Everybody kind of breaking it down. When I saw that, the light went off in my head, and I said, okay, that explains it. It wasn't Widmore who did it. It was Ben. This is the confirmation that we've been waiting for, but it's not quite so clear. Also, as far as mysteries go, okay, so we know that Bram is working against Widmore. You know, don't go with on the boat. And we know that Bram is working with Ilana because we saw him as a henchman last week. But we still don't know who they are working for. You know, who is what mission or what right. interest do they represent? What do you think?
Well, I mentioned last week that I'm pretty sure it's Dharma.
Yeah, the reconstituted Dharma initiative. I think that's becoming one of the more likely theories, or at least the one that I can parse out and sort of follow in my head. The only reason why I'm hesitant about that is because a lot of it is drawn from what we saw in San Diego.
Right, the video and the...
Which, it, you know, presumably that was a tease for season five. Well, we're running out of space for season five, so if that is going to play a part in the show, then this is where it's going to start coming
right.
in. But on the other hand, there's a lot of stuff that was outside of the show, the alternative reality games that we have not seen, Valenzetti Equation, the Hanso Foundation also.
Right.
So is it late in the show, let alone the season, to introduce another third party, you know, someone else that's not Ben or Widmore? I'm not sure. But again, the Reconstituted Dharma Initiative seems to be the most likely. And again, a lot of folks have thoughts on that in You All Everybody.
So how do you think Miles and his mom end up off the island? Do they get kicked off? Is there a big accident and they run away in fear?
Well, we're building up to something really big. We're building up to what I believe, of course, and what most folks believe is the incident, which predates mm-hmm. the purge. The question is what causes that? And now we've seen Miles, you know, Miles says, I don't care about my dad. I don't know anything about my dad. I don't want to have anything to do with my dad. But then he has that beautiful moment when he sees himself and Marvin Candle. And why I think that scene was important is that throughout the series, every time we've seen Dr. Chang or Marvin Candle in the regular flesh, he is a jerk. He is kind of a douche.
He's not nice at all.
He's the crankiest bastard on the island. And so they really pounded that home, and suddenly we see this quick shot of him genuinely happy. I mean, beaming brightly, so affectionate and loving toward his son, right? So I think Miles has this epiphany, realizes that he does care about his dad. He does want to get to know his dad, or at least that he wants to save his dad. As you recall, all of season five, Miles has been totally in the Faraday camp. He's been like, we can't change anything. We can't save them. Ben can't die. Everything is inevitable. But I think it is this moment that changes Miles's mind, and he starts to put into motion some way to try and save his family, save his, you know, his dad
yeah.
and his and his mom. But I think because whatever happened, it's not going to go well. That at
right.
the very last minute, something catastrophic happens, something, I don't know, removes Marvin Candle's arm, and he does not get off the island, and still things turn out the way that they always have.
So is he the first character to resolve his daddy issues?
Because he saw his dad and decided that he likes him after all?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you believe Hurley satisfied his daddy issues because his dad came back and they became best friends?
Oh,
they
I
like
suppose.
Each other? And Locke, in a way, resolved his daddy issues by getting someone else to kill him. So that's another way. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it is possible to resolve a major issue in your life without dying. We
yeah,
certainly hope so.
Maybe.
All right. So what else? Well, I think we have, Kate's back to form.
Yeah, there were so many things she could have said to Roger, and he caught her in it, and she didn't have anything to say. I mean, there are so many things she could have said.
But you know what? I'm going to really turn that around. I am extremely frustrated with Kate because, again, that's sort of a boneheaded thing to do, to be so invested in a stranger's son uh-huh. that he's going to suspect something. But that really is, I think, the fault of the writers. Once again, they need somebody to kind of go over and tip things off balance and start
right.
the first domino where things fall apart and their whole ruse in Othersville falls apart. So, of course, it's going to be Kate's fault. So, yes, Kate is being a moron or Kate is being careless, but it's just, I think, cheap writing. Somebody had to mess up, so it's going to be her.
That is what frustrates me about the Kate character, as I've mentioned. It's just that she's like the convenient scapegoat that
right, I mean,
messes everything
my
up.
My only fear is that she's going to be the scapegoat for everything. I mean, like
uh-huh.
the big whatever that's coming, the war that's coming, the incident that's coming. It better not be Kate, you know, tripping over and knocking over a vial in the laboratory or something like that.
And speaking of frustrating characters, what's going on with Jack?
He's just
acting so strange.
Well, I mean, he's doing the same thing that he's done, which is he's very low key. He's shuffling around. He's looking at the ground. He's sort of just delivering information and wandering off. And it's frustrating, but they're so deliberate about it, like last time, that clearly they're setting him up for something. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think I'm getting a little bit too much of that. A little, okay, we get the point. He's at peace. He's finally giving out information instead of holding it to himself. Can we just sort of move it on a little? Can he start waking up? Because that specific scene where he's been clearly hanging out in with Juliet in Sawyer's house at night for a while, but, you know, clearly just drinking coffee, and Sawyer comes back, he gives him his information, and then just sort of moseys on off. And you're really scratching your head like, what the heck was that all about?
Uh-huh.
I mean, yes, they're setting him up for something, but the suspense is no longer there. It's just frustration. You know, it's just too much, a little too passive for his character.
So you think that Kate going up to Roger was the first domino knocked over in a serious chain of events that's going to cause catastrophe?
Right, absolutely. And specifically in Juliet's line, like, well, here we go. Like, you know, she's already been kind of fearing this moment right down to when they first show up. When Kate and Jack first show up, she's like, well, it's all over, isn't it? You know, us playing house. Well,
I love the way she delivered that line. Right. Here we go.
I think she really believes that this is the beginning of the end. And I believe that, too. So for a while, I'm thinking in my head, wow, isn't it neat that X, Y, and Z with the Dharma Initiative is clearly going to go bad. Like, people are dying at the Swan, and so that's not going well. And at the same time, people are going to begin to suspect Kate and Jack and all of our friends, and these two things are happening at the same time. Now that I think about it, those are probably the same thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, again, it's just this orchestrated concert of catastrophe that's on its way.
So one thing that I noticed, and I don't know if everybody caught this, because I read it in the closed captioning, but I didn't hear anybody actually say it.
Right.
They made a reference to Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting.
He's taking the body out of the van. Uh-huh. One of the faceless, you know, workers, and says, what has he got in here, Jimmy Hoffa? And I thought that was again, you know, this episode was full of pop culture references, but was Jimmy Hoffa dead in 1977?
He disappeared in 1975 and has never, ever been located.
Okay, so it was before when this time period happens, but
yes.
Were people already joking about him being a body somewhere or missing
something? Yeah, they were, because, I mean, he was a Teamster, and there were already allegations of some untoward things happening, so people were saying pretty much when he disappeared that something really bad had happened.
Okay. Well, so, yeah, I mean, that was a cool pop culture, and it was interesting because you're right, it wasn't audible. I didn't hear it. I had to go back like, really? That's what it said? There are lots of stuff to notice, though. I mean, they had the book that Marvin Candle was reading to
Me
Little
and
Miles.
My Polar Bear.
I looked that book up. I can't find it. But someone's got to write Me and My Polar Bear. I mean, seriously, a children's book with a lost tie? I'd buy that.
I would,
That'd
too.
That'd be fantastic. Of course, there was a rabbit, the little statue under which young Miles finds the key. So we've got rabbits already. And we've got a lot of numbers in this episode as well.
Well, the first shot in the whole episode is of a clock that says 3:16.
Yes, I mean, that's not exactly subtle. In fact, I think that, I mean, that's like the opening scene of the season, which was 8:15.
Right.
Although you're asking yourself, why does Dr. Chang sleep in so late? But in any case, you also had, of course, 1.6 or $16 million or 3.2 or $32 million. I thought that was great. Apartment 4, which is where the body is found by young Miles.
Right.
The curious number for me was that they made a point of showing that sick and dying former Mrs. Candle or Chang is in apartment 7. And, you know, that's not really one of our numbers. But very early on in that scene where he calls out and she comes running, she actually comes running down the hallway past apartment 104. So it's not even a single digit. For whatever reason, it might just be a prop error or the actual number on the building they were using.
Uh-huh.
But I'd like to think when I saw that 104 that the first apartment they moved into was
108.
Yeah, I think that would be absolutely fantastic.
The 77 thing, and I noticed this when I was watching a rerun from season 2, Everybody Hates Hugo. Johnny is wearing a shirt from the Led Zeppelin 1977 tour.
Johnny is Hurley's friend.
Right.
And so, and of course, 77 was the number of the episode title,
Enter 77,
when Locke blows up the flame, I think, the communication station. And of course, that all ties to the year where all of this is happening. Out,
so. I just think that's great.
That is great. Again, you know, you don't know, you really, frankly, you just want to believe that all of this stuff has always been on a notepad somewhere and they're just really paying this stuff off, because I definitely love those ties.
Did you notice what was written on the blackboard behind Jack in the class?
They were studying Egyptian.
Yep.
I mean, that's key to this. That's true. Last week or a week before, we were asking, do the Dharma Initiative have any knowledge of the temple or the Egyptian elements here on the island? You know, why are there hieroglyphics in the countdown timer in the swan?
And this is like...
this is confirmation.
Yeah.
They are aware of Egyptian elements or Egyptian archaeology. So I thought that was really cool. I didn't really break it down. Someone did post on our blog that it was basically a study of the hieroglyphic alphabet over time and how it evolved. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, very interesting.
Good stuff. So anything else you caught? Any favorite lines in this episode?
You're just jealous because my power is better than yours.
Well, yes, definitely. I mean, just as far as the superhero or superpower discussion goes, that was a winner. And it's hard to pick. I mean, this was just chock full of them, and Hurley got to deliver most of them. I mean, again, the polar bear poop conversation, I thought, was brilliant. I'd have to go with his breakdown of why the story of Darth and Luke was pivotal and important, and that's because everything, all of this could have been avoided
if they had just communicated. Yes.
Exactly. And again, people throw that criticism against Lost, but frankly, that is the fundamental basis of any dramatic story. I mean, one of my favorite websites was they broke down plots of movies and said that, you know, all of these movies could be 5 minutes long if somebody just talked to someone else. So I think but I just thought that was a brilliant line for him. We had a lot of music in this episode as well.
Yes, and I am very, very ashamed to admit that a lot of it is on my iPod.
I know you have very eclectic taste, but also kind of older taste. But in any case, we had Captain and Tennille with Love Will Keep Us Together, which is almost impossible not to enjoy, I guess, when you hear it.
And a song called It Never Rains in Southern California by Albert Hammond. And this song is actually a little bit hard to find. It's not really a song that you hear every day.
Right. I mean, and that's good. I mean, I'm one of my fears when Lost went back into the 70s was that they were going to go out of their way to say, hey, we're in the 70s. You know, they get a little too obvious about it. And when they got down, oh, for example, this was it Sports Illustrated or one of the magazines that Miles was reading. And if you go into Lostpedia or on the web, they say, yes, that's an actual magazine from 1977. So again, when they kind of go out of their way to go, hey, we're in 1977, that kind of takes me out of the moment. So I'm glad when they pick an obscure song because it kind of offsets the easy pick like Love Will Keep Us Together. But as far as music, there was Miles, you know, did you name or because of Miles' name, did you like Miles Davis?
Uh-huh.
And it's not, nope, it's my wife. I like country.
I wouldn't have pegged him for a country fan, but
no, maybe not.
That does explain the record that was playing in his place.
Right, at the very beginning of the first song of season 5, Shotgun Willie by Willie Nelson. I guess that was, in fact, his record collection. So. Very cool. And what else? Well, finally, of course, we should cover briefly the locations used in this episode. They filmed a lot of this, Miles's backstory, basically, all right around Pearl Kai Shopping Center in Aiea. So the low-rise apartments is there. I think it's called the Harbor Arms. It's actually the scariest hotel to stay in here.
That is not a place you want to be after dark.
Yeah, it's actually the cheapest, you know, accommodations you're going to find on Travelocity or whatever, but there's a reason why. So if you're don't stay at the Harbor Arms unless you really like staying where Lost is filmed. But even that taco stand where he stopped to get the fish taco and gets kidnapped, you can actually eat at that fish taco stand. It's actually there. So rather than staying at that apartment or that hotel, you should just get a taco there.
He can talk to the dead, and he likes tacos too, just like Dave.
Hey, yeah, that's right. Noches de tacos, baby. Oh, another nice connection there. Well, that's our 2 cents on Some Like It Hot.
When we come back, we'll hear from you all, everybody.
Hey, Ryan and Jim, what's up? It's John from North Carolina. Yeah, we had a pretty good episode this week. I'm glad we got Miles' story. It wasn't the strongest of the season, but, I mean, it was a pretty good character episode. It felt like season 2. And it was just like, well, if we didn't get his story, people would keep asking for it. And, you know, it was a pretty good episode. I loved the Hurley side of it. I mean, Hurley was just hilarious at every corner. I don't know what's up with this Brom guy. I don't know if he's... Well, he's not with Widmore. I don't think he's a Ben guy. So... I read on your thing that you think it might be the new Dharma Initiative. That might be cool if they're bringing the alternate reality thing into this, and that'll be neat to see, but there's definitely something going on, and I definitely want to know what the heck is in the shadow of the statue. But anyway, pretty good episode. Nothing much to talk about, and it was just all right episode, but can't wait to hear what y'all think say about it. So, talk to y'all later.
We kick things off once again with our old friend John from North Carolina, and didn't think it was the strongest episode, but he enjoyed it quite a bit.
Clearly not a holy freaking crap episode.
No, I would agree. It's not quite that, but it was very enjoyable. Hurley was great, and it was a good Miles story.
So now we have calls from Mr. Jacob, Matt, and Jessica.
Aloha, Jen and Ryan. Just switching it up a bit. This is Mr. Jacob from the mainland calling to report on Some Like It Hot. Once again, I love this episode. Without having the full picture yet, my only real critique of Season 5 up to this point had been, why is Miles slowly drifting to the background to an almost, sub-Rose and Bernard level? Is Miles' shirt slowly reddening? But this episode was an amazing recovery. I liken it to an Eminem, light and sweet shell of witty dialogue, irreverence, and self-reference on the outside. But inside lies a solid chunk of pure chocolatey story and mythology. Two things I noticed. Did you see a strange zen-like thing going on with Jack? He almost had like a Season 1 Locke kind of aura going on, lurking in the background, but, saying and doing what he needs to and when he needs to. He's working on something, and I can't wait to find out what it is. Second thing, Bram said, my friend, a.k.a. we haven't seen the last of Caesar, at least not from flashbacks. All right, guys, just like Lost itself, thank you for this podcast and for giving me something great and thought-provoking to look forward to every week. Take care.
Ryan and Jen, this is Matt from Ohio. Theory for you, if this third faction is the new Dharma, would it be possible that what lies in the shadow of the statue is the Dharma mass grave that Ben did? Just a thought, if this is a revenge mission, maybe that's their main focus. Love the podcast.
Hey, guys, this is Jessica in Birmingham. I really loved this episode. I could tell that I really loved this episode because in retrospect, I was actually sitting 9 months pregnant, perched on top of my coffee table watching it, just cracking up, being tense. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. I loved the banter between Miles and Hurley, and also I loved the creative death by electromagnetism via the tooth filling. I thought that was great. My theory for this one is anytime that Lost tries to make me believe that somebody's dead without actually giving me too much proof, I tend to get really skeptical. So I believe the third party in the Widmore-Ben competition for the island, the third party, I believe, is going to be Pierre Chang, and that Brahm and Ileana are working for Pierre Chang. And also, I keep getting drawn back to that video that we saw from Comic-Con this past year with Pierre Chang. Can't wait to listen to the podcast. Y'all have a great day. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for those calls. So Mr. Jacob worried, like we were, I think, that they were just going to waste Miles' character, but they really paid it off this week.
I want some chocolate.
Chocolate. Chocolate is what you took away from his call. Well, that was an important, I like that was a very colorful detail. He's, I guess, not as frustrated with Jack. He sees some lockness in Jack. Someone's observed that previously as well.
I see it too, and I can kind of see where Jack is coming from, but I would like to see him kick some butt again.
Yeah, I think we're all waiting for that. And I hadn't noticed that Bram says, my friend, the same way that Caesar does.
So I hadn't noticed that either. That's cool.
But does that mean that Caesar is still going to be a factor in this show?
I really think he's dead. I don't think there's any way he could have survived that gunshot. But like Mr. Jacob said, he could probably come back in a flashback.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not dead, then that's really... how many times can we see that and not believe that it's happened? Matt, kind of just sort of carrying on the mention that it could be the new Dharma initiative. And he says that that would make sense if it's for revenge, for the purge. And that the thing that lies in the shadow of the statue is the grave.
God, I love that.
It could be anything. But that, why not that?
I love that.
I've read online a theory about the statue is not even a statue on the island. That, in fact, what they're going to be talking about is a statue on the Ann Arbor campus. So now I'm like, I got to go find a nice virtual tour of the Ann Arbor campus, see what statues they have there. But I probably think Matt's idea makes a little more sense. And finally, Jessica in Birmingham says that she thinks that if it's not Ben, if it's not Widmore, then it's the not dead Pierre Chang. What do you think?
Well, I don't think he's dead, so I don't see why not.
I think he's dead. I don't think he survives. I think that it might be people acting on behalf of his agency, on behalf of the Dharma Initiative and what he represented, but I don't think it's him. But she does make a good point. We have to see someone hacked to pieces at this point to believe that they're dead.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And if, you know, Miles's mom says she's dead, Miles's mom also said that, you know, he left. And now we don't believe that to be the case. So if she lied about one thing, then why not lie about both?
She just might not know his whereabouts. I mean, as far as she's concerned, he could be dead.
Yes, that's true. I mean, what one character doesn't know about another could probably fill a book just the same size as the scripts for Lost. Now we've got calls from Evan, Ace, and Amber.
Ryan and Jen, what's up? It's Evan from the mainland again. So just calling with a quick theory. Maybe you guys think the same as well. Haven't had time to read the blog yet to get your first thoughts. But I think that the reason that Pierre Chang sent his wife and Miles away was to protect them from the purge or the incident, because there's a new YouTube video where Pierre Chang is pretty much telling whoever's watching the video that they're going to die, and to help save them, and it sounds like Daniel is in the background. So I guess that's what's going to happen. They're going to try to convince Pierre that this thing's going to happen where they're all going to die, and that you need to protect yourself somehow, and that, in fact, they're going to try to change the future. Can't wait for the podcast. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Ace from Jacksonville, and I had a couple of thoughts on tonight's episode, Some Like It Hot. What if Miles is actually causes his own exile from the island, therefore, you know, creating his own daddy issues, which just seem to come up every single episode? Sort of he does it on purpose, maybe even sort of a stay away from the bunny or keep the Miles away from each other. Another thing, Juliet knows a lot more about what's going on. That whole here we go sort of attitude was, all right, well, it's starting. I know what's going to happen next kind of deal. She's in the know, I think, a little bit. I kind of like Turley's reference to Darth Vader and the I am your father and losing his hand and his arm, sort of like Pierre Chang in the future, losing his arm. And also like the fact that Hurley thinks Ewoks suck. Thanks. Love the podcast.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, it's Amber from Utah. I just barely finished watching the latest episode. I totally agree with whoever it was that said the incident is going to be when somebody runs into their past or future self or something, just like the rabbits, because now we have baby Miles on the island. Who knew? We're talking about Lost being Atlantis and how Plato said that it disappeared into the sea and everyone believes that it sunk. Well, when you watch the bit where Ben moves the island for the first time, and all you see is the purple flash, and then it shows the island being gone. All you see is these two ripples, and it looks like something has sunk into the sea. If that's all that Plato saw, it would be natural for him to come to that conclusion. So I really think, that's evidence to support that theory. I don't know how I feel about the Atlantis theory, but it works. So anyway, I'm interested to hear your thoughts, so I'll stop calling you now. Bye.
Mahalo for those calls. So Evan, just like I believe Jessica mentioning, again, that Comic-Con video, that's the 2008 Comic-Con video where he's sending a message to the future that we're all about to die and you need to reconstitute the Dharma Initiative. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so it makes sense that if we were going to follow whatever happened, that Miles gets sent off the island because Dr. Chang is trying to get them off. But as we discussed, when we discussed the episode, I even like it better if Miles is the person who tells him this is coming.
Uh-huh.
And so, again, everyone creating their own destiny. That's sort of the same thought that Ace is saying as well. What if Miles causes that own setup and creates the daddy issues that he's got? And actually, we've discovered that's happened for some of our characters now. They're responsible for their own daddy issues. But do you think when Juliet said that wonderful line, here we go, that she actually knows more than she's letting on? That she actually has a clear understanding of the history of the descent into madness that happens in the Dharma Initiative, and now she knows this is where it happened?
Well, she might know it third hand. I mean, she might have been taught just the history of Dharma and everything about it, just, you know, from working there.
Right. I mean, I'm wondering if there was like sort of a brief orientation and, you know, the once upon a time, this young boy disappeared, et cetera, et cetera. But I think if that were in her consciousness, then maybe she would not have participated so willingly in his being taken, or at least had said something about that. But, you know, again, I like anything that gives Juliet the opportunity to actually be kind of sneaky, because I think she's a brilliant actress.
And, she is a great
actress.
And
for her to be bad, I mean, people are still suspicious of her being the double agent for Ben when she ended up with Jack and friends. So
right.
Why not? I can definitely see that. And I like what Ace said about Marvin Candle losing his arm. I said that, you know, maybe that's what happens in The Purge, but he goes, come on, Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. Luke loses his hand. So very good tie. And finally, Amber from Utah saying that the incident, like we do, is that you run into yourself and that's what causes all heck to break loose in the universe.
Yeah, except now I'm still trying to figure out who exactly it is that runs into himself. I mean, it could be Miles, because it seems where that's going, but really, it could be anybody at this point.
Well, how many people are running around on the island with a younger self? I mean, it can't be Ben unless Ben comes back to 1977.
True.
So at this point, I think that the only person there's two of in 1977 is Miles, and so that's the only person that this situation can come up with.
Okay, you're right.
It is important to note, by the way, that this is a separate Comic-Con video. This is the 2007
right.
Comic-Con video. So if you're coming late to the show or the podcast, there's a lot of references in these theories to stuff that has not aired on the program. So
right.
The 2007 video was two bunnies that appear in the same room that are the same bunny, and Dr. Chang says, or whoever says, to keep them apart. So that's what these are in reference to. And the 2008 is the message to the future.
Mm-hmm.
Got that?
Yes.
All right. And finally, Amber did note that if Plato saw what we saw on TV, he'd think that Atlantis had sunk to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Now we have calls from Anthony, Aaron, and Scott.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Anthony from Philly calling once again. I have a theory about Faraday. I think that while he was at Ann Arbor, he did some electromagnetic research and some research on the swan and what the swan's all about. And I think that he knows how to cause the incident, and he's going to use that to send the lawsuit back to the future. Back to the future. Well, back to the present that we know of, so they get reunited with Locke and all that. So I think the incident's going to be the key that sends them all back to the future, and Faraday's going to be the key to causing the incident. That's my theory. Have a good one, guys.
Hello, this is Aaron from Washington, D.C. I have something that I just want to throw out there about the swan. Okay, it's being built in an area that's supposedly off-limits to the Dharma Initiative. So it is. It's a place. They have to be secret about it. So this means that the others, or Widmore, the guy who's in charge of the others right now, doesn't know that they're doing this. My questions are, what does that mean for Jacob? Does this mean that Jacob and or the island is being fooled as well? Let's say that Jacob doesn't know that this stuff is going on. Does this mean that there's sort of a limit to his power, a limit to his knowledge about what goes down on his island? And what are the stipulations of that? Now, let's say that he does know that this is going on. He's just choosing not to tell Widmore. Or does that mean that he's allowing this to happen, that he wants it to happen? Does this mean that Jacob wants or approves of the hatch being built, the hatch that we know is responsible for crashing and bringing the 815ers to the island? Chew on that for a little bit. I know I have been. That is all, so adios.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. Scott from Nashville here. I thought this was a great episode filled with a lot of nerdy stuff and Dharma mythology, some great lines from Hurley and Miles. Perhaps the best little exchange was Hurley saying, "Dude, that guy's a total douche," and then Miles says, "That douche is my dad." That was particularly funny. It was an interesting scene in the restaurant when Miles is listening to the dead body on the table, and he talks about Felix was on his way to show Widmore some pictures of empty graves and a purchase order for an old airplane. It's good information, but still doesn't quite solve the mystery. I'm not sure whether that means Widmore staged the crash, or if Felix was showing Widmore evidence that Ben staged the crash. So I thought we were getting some some really juicy information, but then when I watched it a second time, I wasn't really convinced that it was Whitmore who staged the crash, judging by how they, by the words that Miles used when he was describing what the man was doing. So that probably deserves some more discussion. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for those calls. So Anthony says that Faraday caused the incident. I guess that's a reasonable theory as well.
Well, he has been close to the donkey wheel. Mm-hmm. He's been rubbing shoulders with the bigwigs over in Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. He knows a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and he may want to try to send everyone back. He might try to fix things and send him and his friends back to the present or the future, and his attempt to do so could be the incident.
So do you think he's so driven by grief for Charlotte that he does this?
Well, I mean, one of the most interesting things about his character is that he asserts, and everyone believes to some extent, that whatever happens, happens, and you can't change it, but he is also the only character we've seen so far attempt to, well, no, Saeed definitely tried to change things, but he genuinely changed things by planting that message in Desmond's head.
Yeah.
So does Miles believe what he's saying or not? And if not, he seems very driven to fix things or change things. And so that might very well be what happens. He starts to meddle with stuff. As far as Aaron, he makes a good point that the Swan is in others' territory. So what's going on? We also know that we've got Widmore, the horse rider, and Alpert and Jacob being referenced. Do they know that the Swan is coming together or not?
Well, we discussed this before a little bit. And then I was of the opinion that they didn't at first, but they had to have known about it in order for Ben to have known about it.
Right. At a certain point, they became aware of the Swan because we see Ben take Juliet to the Pearl to watch Jack in
right.
the hatch. So that level of awareness was clear, but I was originally of the opinion that they did not know, that the story is a little simpler if the existence of the Swan was unknown to the others or to the island natives, right mm-hmm. down to, the fact that the pallet was still dropping, and even the Dharma Initiative might have thought that the Swan was still in operation, and the people in the Swan may not have even been aware for some period of time that something had happened, that the
right.
purge had even happened. It seemed to be that's what they were implying. Now I'm not so sure. On one hand, the existence of the Swan is clearly significant to the Dharma Initiative, but they also say in this episode that this station is secret. Like, despite the fact that they've got construction crew and stuff uh-huh. all over it, it's in a forbidden section, and that Dr. Candle says you're not supposed to know anything about it. So,
right.
I think the jury is out, but it would call into question whether or not the all-knowing Jacob knows everything. Do you think that Jacob is supernatural? And if so, he would have to know about it. Do you think he's supernatural?
Yeah, I think he is supernatural, and I think him being supernatural would mean that, he knows pretty much everything.
All right. And Scott from Nashville liked the episode. Great lines, definitely, but pointing out, as we had mentioned in our section of the show, that we cannot immediately presume that the dead Felix means that Widmore was not responsible for the wreckage on the bottom of the ocean, because Felix might have been carrying the file to blackmail Widmore and gets
killed.
True.
That's
and
true.
It kind of goes to Wes in Austin, who sent us an email with some screen caps, because he believes that Felix, the dead person on the table, is the same person that we saw, or that Tom, when Tom shows Michael a video cassette of Widmore killing somebody. And if that's the case, Widmore killing Felix, then Felix may or may not have been on Widmore's team. Of course, it's also likely that Widmore would kill anybody who had information for him that he didn't want to get out there. But in any case, I think the basic conclusion is the jury is still out on who's behind the wreckage at the bottom of the ocean. Next calls are from RJ, Dan, and Steve.
Hey, my name is RJ. I'm from Rhode Island. I just had a little food for thought from last week's episode of Lost, or this week. But I noticed when Miles tells Hurley, he says that he can't have conversations with the ghost. He specifically says that. But it seems to be contradicting when he says that, because in a previous episode, I remember Miles goes into a house and he has a conversation with the ghost. He says, well, where's the money? And the ghost, and then he gets the money and he leaves. So I would consider that a conversation, but not really important, just something to think about that I thought was ironic. Not important yet, at least. Thanks. Keep up the podcast. See ya.
Aloha, Ryan and Jen. This is Dan from Pennsylvania. Just giving a call to say that after watching last night's episode of Lost, I got to say that Hurley and Miles are great together. And I got to say that for, the recap episode that they have before the series finale, that'll be next year, they need to get Miles and Hurley on the island just talking about everything that's happened to them so far in their own way. I think that would just be killer, and that'd be a great recap episode, just having them talk about everything that's happened to them in chronological order. And just with their point of view of it, you would get Hurley's jokes and Miles' sarcasm. It would be fantastic. Or at least that's what I thought anyway. So long, guys. Great podcast. Listen all the time. And aloha.
Hey, Steve Phoenix. Long time. Anyway, quick thought. I was just driving to work, listening to your most recent podcast. And my theory is maybe the reason that they're unable to have children is that the Dharma has poisoned the island in order to purge the others to get them off the island. Because obviously, if they can't reproduce, well, you can't have kids. You can't grow. So maybe Dharma left after the purge, or maybe he was the cause of it and was planned to come back. And maybe that's what we're going to be seeing coming up here also. But today is Dharma coming back, thinking the others. Anyway, just a thought. That's great.
Thanks for those calls. So, RJ, getting a little specific, what do you think? Does Miles have conversations with the dead or not?
No, that's a good point. Unless this grandson was thinking about the money when he died.
I suppose that could work, but it seemed that he was very clear in how he explained it. Obviously, when he kneels next to a body and says, okay, what really happened, he's just as much talking to himself as he is to the body.
Right.
But it really seemed that when he went up to that bedroom that he was sort of looking for a specific memory. It wasn't just a feeling. He wasn't just sensing what someone knew at the time of death, unless what you're saying is true.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe he was just jealous that Hurley's power was better than his. Dad from Pennsylvania kind of pointing out that, you know, he thinks that they should do the recap clip show with Miles and Hurley.
That would be great.
That's a little meta, but absolutely perfect. That's exactly the way they should do it. I can see it in my head.
Let's send it in to Dalton.
Yeah, send it in to them, because clearly, I honestly, Jorge Garcia and Ken Leung would do a much better job than pretty much all of the clip shows ABC has given us so
yes,
far.
Yes, absolutely.
Finally, Steve in Phoenix going with the simple solution here. The reason why you can't have babies on the island is because the Dharma Initiative did something seriously bad with poison and just made that fertility problem.
That's a heck of a lot of poison, though.
I guess, but I mean, you know, people are saying that you can't have babies because of the time difference between the real world and the island, and so something happens in the womb that
yeah.
was presented, and recently now people are saying that the whole thing, the what screwed it up for babies was the fact that Ethan was born when Ethan was not supposed to be born,
mm-hmm.
and so this is much more simple. And what clicked in my head is last week when Widmore says you should have exterminated them, and someone
mm-hmm.
did observe that sounds a little harsh, or that
yeah.
sounds like the way someone talks about vermin in their house, you know, rats or bugs. And if that's what they do, like they just basically go out there and strafe them with chemicals, that could be a possibility. And then you have the hostiles, the others, really manic and trying to continue their, you know, their line, and that's why they steal babies, that's why they're obsessed with fertility. And specifically, I like the idea that maybe they spend some time off the island for several years and now they're coming back recharged and ready to go.
Yeah.
So, good thoughts. Well, that's all the voicemails we're going to share this week, but we got many, many more, and of course we listen to and write out every single one so we can really appreciate your genius. We definitely want to thank Steve Freese from Las Vegas. Great call from Pete from Rockford, Illinois. He pointed out that Tanya Raymond, the actress who plays Alex,
yeah.
she was recently on Bones.
So, I've heard that.
So, check it out if you want to see more of Alex. Or the actress, I'd really like to see more of her on Lost.
Yeah.
But I guess you get your fix how you can. Actually, Pete also asked how to pronounce our last name, because it's true, we've heard it's a pretty interesting interpretations. We don't say it on our show, but it's Ozawa. Like,
Ozawa.
Yeah, like Seiji Ozawa, the conductor.
In Boston,
but
yeah.
no relation, you
no
know.
No relation.
Not much, not really that much talent in our bloodline. but we also got a lot of anonymous calls. We'd like to remind you, we love to know where you're from at least, but certainly who you are. If you don't want to say your name, just make up one. Say you're Geronimo Jackson, but definitely tell us where you're from. So let's get on to the blogs and emails.
Jeff in Cape Coral writes, loved last night's episode. Damon and Carlton mentioned in their podcast last week that this was a good place for some levity before an intense final 4 hours of the season. I thought they accomplished that goal, but still managed to move the storyline Caroline Ford. I love the Faraday-Miles encounter at the end of the episode. When we last saw Faraday with Sawyer Juliet et al. In 1974, he looked lost, as he had so much of his storyline. When he emerged from the sub, however, he was oozing with confidence. I was easily tantalized by what events over the three-year span brought about that change in Daniel, and by how much of that story we'll learn.
Yeah, I mean, he's been missing. We've been waiting for him, and the last time we saw him, he was pretty broken. Yeah. And now he's like, I'm here, dude. You know, good to see you. Long time no see.
He's going
to
save the day.
I guess. Knives Monroe writes on the blog, at the risk of sounding uber emotional, it's my embarrassing yet embracing admission to say that I really related to Ken Leung's character, Miles. I will not lie. This is the first moment in season 5 that made me cry. I am a man, I can admit it. Truthfully, seeing Pierre Chang holding baby Miles with Miles tearing up in the background is such an amazing image. Only Lost can make that happen.
Amen.
Yeah, good acting.
Tim writes, how weird that an episode with the content of Dead is Dead left me empty, yet an episode with a Star Wars reference in the title felt so alive. Didn't care much for the Star Wars references, but I loved watching this episode. I've always thought that I get more out of Lost's grand story than anything else in the show, but this season has taught me one thing. I only like the mythology insofar as it relates to the characters and how it makes the characters relate to one another. There have been a few episodes this season that have ticked all the boxes we were pining for in the early seasons, but have been utterly uninteresting. I don't care what the smoke monster is made out of or who made it, I just want to know how it's judging its victims. I don't care that certain characters are special, I just care what they will end up thinking and believing about the island and each other. Anyone watching Lost solely for answers to the big questions of the show is going to be very disappointed at the end, I think.
And I guess to that, amen. I mean, you know, again, we love all of the mysteries, but if you've got that checklist, they're going to miss probably 100 boxes at the end of season 5.
Yeah, probably.
6. So if you're waiting for that, I'd worry for you, because the mysteries are great, the explanations are great, but the characters are really what make it, and how they're depicted are made it. And we might be in the minority for not liking Dead is Dead and liking this episode better, but it's because of the depth of those characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alias posts on our blog, I like Hurley and Miles. They are funny and a joy to watch, but I have my problems with pacing and development of the overall story. This story did not have anything really to do with last week's episode in terms of story flow. It kind of feels like every week we are watching a different, separate story linked by trivial, secondary stories. I mean, consider that Ben, Locke, Jin, Sun, Saeed, and yes, Rose and Bernard do not even appear in this episode at all. It's impossible to keep up the flow of the story this way. These characters are the story and they are rarely together, and now they are only seen every other episode or so. What do you think?
Yeah, I get what he's saying. The real reason I really dug this episode was because it was a much needed humor break.
Right. I mean, it's an expose. It's Trisha Tanaka is dead. It's a lighter moment, and it still gave you some movement. The other thing though that he said was that, you know, we're seeing these self-contained episodes and it's moving more like a serial rather than a series. And actually, I think we should be used to that. That was season 1. That mm-hmm. was, we're going to explore Kate, then we're going to explore Jack, then we're going to explore Sawyer. And maybe that form doesn't work anymore, or maybe we're tired of it because now we just really want to move forward. I definitely agree that there wasn't much forward motion this episode, but I got to say, I'm nostalgic for the flashbacks. I'm nostalgic for those character explanations, so this episode worked for me quite a bit.
I really want to see Desmond again, though.
Mm, I definitely agree.
Rich in Cleveland writes on the blog, I am of the school that contends that each detail is deliberate and invested with some meaning. Yes, it is amusing to imagine Hurley's character deciding to write the sequel to Star Wars, but what is the subtext to this comic relief, especially in light of the abduction scene with Bram? The Empire Strikes Back. I have no idea who these latest others are, but I felt a palpable fear for our treasured island from this unknown force that has never claimed to serve the island, only to be the winning side. Now we have some indication of what Miles meant in season 4 when he warned Saeed about random transmissions from the staff phone. It can hurt. It can hurt a lot.
Right. I mean, we touched on a number of the ways that The Empire Strikes Back was not just a fun plot point, but it has a lot of ties, whether it's the daddy issues, whether it's the dismemberment issues. Mm-hmm. And he's pointing out that it could be the Empire striking back. And this really does feel like a hint that it's the returning Dharma initiative coming back to reclaim everything. And he mentions that specific scene. Yeah. Saeed was like, I'm going to play with the sat phone. What's the problem? Who cares if it lets out a little bit of transmission? And Miles says that it could hurt. And now we know. know, Miles has had specific contact prior to getting on the freighter with somebody who wanted to stop him.
Right.
So he knows clearly that there's another power, another interest interested in the island. So he would know that sending out a signal could probably be a bad idea. I definitely like that a lot. Cued Blue writes on the blog, "It's now apparent that, despite fan speculation, Charlotte's body did not disappear during the last flash in 1977 because she already existed there as a young girl. With Miles seeing his baby self, the writers have now blatantly told us what they hinted at when Locke traveled back, skipping to see the light in the sky from the night he was banging on the hatch. Two different versions of the same person can exist in the same time space. The question, of course, remains, what happens if we don't heed Pierre Chang's video blooper warning and the different versions interact or touch?" So yes, I mean, again, seeing the confirmation here, being in the same area doesn't cause the universe to implode, but we don't know what happens if the bunnies come into contact with each other.
Joshua from Sacramento writes, "Miles will interact with baby Miles. This will be the incident. The interaction will create a feedback loop in time as Miles will be crossing his own timeline. It will have at least one of two possible effects, perhaps both. One, the island's timeline will contract in response, bringing the past forward and the future, our present, back. Thus, all our losties will be reunited, at least for a while. Then when the compensating measures of the Swan Hatch or perhaps some other stopgap measure goes into effect, time will right itself and our losties will be pulled apart, some even being pulled into the island's past, others to the present, or maybe even the future. How cool would that be? Two, more likely, baby Miles, due to the interaction with his own future self, gains an awareness of other people's timelines. This manifests itself as an apparent ability to listen to dead people, but really he's just aware of their past. I think both his parents know full well that this is what happened and why."
So I definitely like that second possibility that, you know, if he really comes into contact with himself, something significant happens, but that significant thing is that suddenly he becomes clairvoyant or has this ability to deal with people because he can look both ways on a timeline that supposedly ends.
God, so that is so great.
I really like it. But, you know, maybe it also is going to mess with time. And one of the things that they've described when the frozen donkey wheel was turned and, you know, gets knocked off its axis and there was this oscillation back and forth.
Right.
That's it kind of wobbling and then coming back into focus. So that could still be what happens with the incident or with this contact. And so there will still be more moving around through time. I'm not sure if as a casual viewer I could take much more of that same thing happening over again. So mm-hmm. I think the second explanation is more interesting to me. Matt in Buffalo emails and says, "I think that Ilana and her team are definitely working for Ben, or at least are on Ben's team. After Miles gets kidnapped for working for the wrong team, I am fairly sure of it now. Two more pieces of evidence. I think Ben stole the gun and shot Caesar for the purpose of clearing the way for Ilana and company, since he had a gun and thought he was running the show. Plus, they were on Flight 316, which was information that Eloise Hawking had. I doubt that another group has found all that information out. I think they work with Ben, not for Ben, because in Ben's dealing with Eloise, he did not seem to be in control. He just seemed to be the one who had to find the Oceanic 6 and get them back. He's not the one in charge of the whole outfit." So what do you think? Ben and Ilana are actually on the same side?
I doubt it. I kind of really doubt it at this point, just because we know that the reformed Dharma Initiative is coming and we haven't seen them yet.
Well, how do we know that the reformed Dharma Initiative is coming? And that's if you take the Comic-Con video as gospel.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if we would put too much money on that. But, you know, I think he makes a good case that it could be Ben, at least in the sense that I doubted that Widmore was behind it because it seemed unlikely that Widmore would have someone on the plane that same day that Ben and them are leaving on the plane. So by the same argument, it seemed odd that they would know about this plane and that it's the plane crossing the spot that they had just determined is where the island is going to be. That seems unlikely as well.
I still can't figure out how Hawking fits into all this.
Well, I think actually Hawking for many people is the reason why they think the Dharma Initiative is who's coming back. Why? Because, she was in the Dharma Initiative.
Yeah.
She's hanging out in a still functioning Dharma station off the island. So maybe she always was with the Dharma Initiative, and that's actually what's happening. But a good theory, Matt.
Rebecca in Copenhagen writes, "Naomi and her team arrive on the island in season 4 with a mission from Widmore to capture Ben so that Widmore could return. I had always sort of viewed the battle for control of the island as a sandbox struggle between Ben and Widmore, but until now, I think I've been overlooking the third element in the mix, the Dharma loyalists who feel that turf belongs to with them. Could these be the children of the D.I.ers who were shipped off island to escape the purge and are returning to take back what's theirs?
So again, you know, the Dharma Initiative could be this new third party, but I like when she mentioned that maybe, you know, our new friends, Ilana and Bram and Caesar, they're not Dharma Initiative directly, but they're descendants of the folks that are running around on the island. Now, actually, I think that'd be kind of cool.
That would be kind of cool.
So, it's definitely lining up to be the returning Dharma initiative, at least for this podcast.
Michael 281 writes, so, the third faction. Bram was the guy in the truck who spoke to Miles. Now he's on the beach with Ilana on a mission. Very cool. I'm still not digging the secret password business, but hopefully that'll make more sense in time. Are these Dharma people trying to make a return? Maybe. My wife's thinking that the third faction might be Eloise Hawking. That makes some sense. She was another important person who left the island, although we don't really know why she'd want to go back. She has an edge that she knows about the time travel business, and Ben and Widmore don't seem to know as much. She also knows about Desmond.
Well, again, I think Michael is sort of saying he's not sure if it's the Dharma Initiative, but he gives more evidence that it could be. One, again, Eloise Hawking was affiliated or is in a Dharma Initiative station in the present. And more importantly, the whole password business. The password business with the what did one snowman say to another snowman was a Dharma test.
Right.
It was a test of Dharma to see if you're the next person. So it seems quite likely that if that's one of their shticks, if that's their gig, then that's what's still going on. John Fisher writes on the blog, I was thinking about the guys who kidnapped Miles. Pretty mild kidnappers, don't you think? Come with us and learn all you want to learn. Don't go on the freighter. Sorry, no money. Okay, goodbye. Not exactly the way I would imagine that Widmore or Ben would handle the situation. They would not have dumped Miles off on the road. They would have dumped him in the river with cement boots. I think that's a fair point. I mean, it's interesting that some clear power doesn't want Miles to get on the boat, but doesn't want that to not happen bad enough to kill him.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I guess we couldn't talk you into it. See you later, dude.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fair, again, that it's not Ben or Widmore behind those folks in the van or behind Caesar and Ilana, because they seem to be a little more ruthless than that.
It's just a bunch of hippies.
Could be. Well, actually, if it was the hippies, that's the Dharma Initiative.
Raul writes, I have a theory about the title and play on words in it. Since the actual theme seems to be Egyptian mythology, I looked for a Hoth reference and found Thoth. Thoth was the son of the god Ra, and he was known for his ability to communicate with the dead. So like Thoth, Miles is the son of a high-ranking Dharma scientist deity and can speak to the dead.
Very nice.
Yes.
And, you know, we just talked about Ra or Richard Alpert and that whole pharaoh business. So here you've got a Thoth who talks to dead people and the son of someone important. So, you know, this Egyptian stuff is really climbing in prominence. We could be looking at what is going to basically be a big metaphor or a big retelling of an Egyptian story.
Do you think they're going to try to build a pyramid somewhere in Honolulu?
Boy, I don't know. I'd like to see that set. In any case, we got lots of great feedback. Many calls, many comments on the blog, over 180 so far.
And
it's only Friday. We're doing this one early. So we really appreciate all of your feedback. And after the next new episode of Lost, which is unfortunately going to be in 2 weeks, please definitely let us know what you thought.
Comment on the blog at hawaiiup.com/lost. Write us an email at lost@hawaiiup.com or call us on the Lost line 808-356-0127.
Now, by the way, a lot of you asked after I briefly mentioned Twitter last week that, hey, what are your Twitter accounts? So we'll mention those again in case you want to follow us. Just know that we don't Twitter about just Lost. We actually Twitter about all kinds of things.
And I Twitter about some really boring stuff. So.
But if you're still interested, you can be our followers. You can join now the Oprah, you know, army and sign up for Twitter. And I'm on the service as Hawaii. Yes, the name of the state. And your Twitter handle?
Kilinahe. It's spelled KILINAHE.
Or you just follow me and you'll see I Twitter at my wife quite a bit.
Yeah.
In any case, that's it for you all, everybody, and that means it's time to move into the Forward Cabin.
This is where we hide production news, rumors, spoilers, sightings, and all kinds of stuff. So if you don't want to know what's coming up, you might want to skip ahead.
Welcome to the Forward Cabin, the forward-looking part of the transmission. Now, not only is this going to be a short segment this week, but it's also kind of a bummer.
Next week, there will be a lost clip show titled The Story of the Oceanic Six.
Yay.
The ABC synopsis reads, what transpired for both the Oceanic Six and the remaining island survivors during the 3 years after the island was moved will be explored.
So that sounds interesting. Well, yay. I mean, it's not just about the Oceanic Six, which is a relief. But the only way that that could be interesting to me, the only thing that I would find helpful is if maybe they put it all in the right chronological order, that could sort things out.
Or if it was hosted by Jorge Garcia and Ken Leung.
Ken Leung, the two of them. That would be awesome. But fortunately, it's just a one-week hiatus, and the following week, April 29th, will be the next new episode of Lost, and it's titled The Variable. It's also going to be the 100th episode of Lost.
No way!
Congratulations to everybody. The ABC synopsis for that episode reads, the time of reckoning has begun when Daniel Faraday comes clean regarding what he knows about the island. Well, that pretty much sums up everything we want to see in that episode, I think.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great. So we did see a little bit of clips in the preview. So what did we see?
Sawyer says, this is our home. Come with us, Freckles. Miles says, any one of us can die. We see Jack, Kate, and Faraday at the Dharma Motor Pool fighting with Dharma folks in blue jumpsuits. They exchange gunfire and something explodes. The announcer says, sides will be chosen. Some will run for cover. Some will stay and fight. Lost explosive 100th episode in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. That's the only bad news. We can look a little further ahead since we're here about what follows that. Episode 15 is on May 6th, and the title of that episode is Follow the Leader. The ABC synopsis for that is, Jack and Kate find themselves at odds over the direction to take to save their fellow island survivors. Locke further solidifies his stance as leader of the others, and Sawyer and Juliet come under scrutiny from the Dharma Initiative. So, sounds like a lot's going to happen in that episode as well. More things falling apart. Locke clearly pones somebody. And finally, yes, there's going to be big surprise dissension in the ranks as far as what to do next.
And finally, episode 16 and 17, the season finale, The Incident, that will air on May 13th.
And that's something we're all looking forward to, and yet at the exact same time, dreading.
Oh, I'm dreading
dearly.
It.
A lot of people have asked us what our plans are during the hiatus which follows. Well, I think like last year, what we're going to do is we're going to enjoy a brief vacation, but that brings us quickly to July when Comic-Con
yes.
is happening.
We plan on filing live reports from Comic-Con, and then we plan on diving into season 3.
Right. So there'll be a break before and after that, but Comic-Con is fantastic. If you didn't like that, clearly you don't have to listen to it, because we're not just going to cover Lost. We're going to cover our experience, the people that we meet. But any audio that we can pick up, if there's a panel, if there's an interview, if there's anything Lost related, certainly we're going to want to share that with you, so stay tuned. And then, I think the completion of season 2 went pretty well.
Yes, it did.
We're going to take on season 3. So there you go. Even though the story for Lost this season will end on the 13th, it doesn't mean the end of the transmission, and we'd love if you joined us for that ride. So that's it for this Forward Cabin segment, and that means that's it for this episode of The Transmission.
We will be back in 2 weeks for the next new episode. That will be on April 29th, and the episode will be called The Variable.
Please enjoy the break. We certainly will, but don't forget us. The Transmission is powered by you, so please, after you see that episode, let us know what you thought.
Comment on the blog at hawaiiup.com/lost. Send us an email to lost@hawaiiup.com or call the Lost line at 808-356-0127.
Remember, the Transmission is available in both regular MP3 and enhanced AAC formats with chapter marks you can skip around or even have better sound quality. You can check it out. Links on our blog or in the iTunes Music Store. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Stay lost.
Aloha.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lost Podcasting Network. Get all your favorite Lost podcasts in one feed at lostcasts.blogspot.com.